Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to episode 90 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I'm your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me for episode 90 is my co-host, Matthew Aguilar.
What up?
Janelle Wheeler's back with us.
Hey, guys.
And over in the bad boy desk is Mr. Brandon Davis.
Hello.
The original Trinity member, back again from his another long stint on the road. Well, good to have you back, buddy.
Hey, thanks, man. Good to be here.
And we brought Brandon back, and as usual, he's coming with some inside scoops. We're going to be talking about his visit to DC's Birds of Prey set. But before we get to all that, we have some new trailers to talk about, just some for some little movies that are coming out in 2020. First, we're going to be talking about Ghostbusters Afterlife. We finally got a look at director Jason Reitman's long-awaited direct sequel to Ghostbusters. So we're going to talk about that. And the sequel to Wonder Woman 1984, also dropped its first trailer at CCXP. So we are going to talk about that as well. Plus, we also got to talk about Watchmen, new comics of the week. You know how it goes around here. So let's get started. Let's start at the top. Let's go with Ghostbusters. So the trailer for Ghostbusters Afterlife is out. I'd say it's kind of safe to say it's not quite what we would have expected from a Ghostbusters movie. That's not to say it's a bad thing, but it is also to say that, in my opinion, it is a bad thing. So let's talk about that, because I know that opinions from just hearing the warm-up here are pretty split. I did not enjoy this trailer. I didn't really like it at all. I have watched it maybe like 1.5 times. I don't really care to watch it again. It's a very kind of, to me, as I told a friend, I saw what Jason Reitman has put together. It's kind of very somber. Looks like a little bit of a child coming of age story, discovery, a little bit of danger. I basically said it's Amblin. Amblin presents Ghostbusters on my Super 8 camera, the movie. Or no, Ghostbusting Stranger Things on my Super 8 camera, the movie.
It's there, called it. Ghost yeah. Things.
Yeah, it's yeah. Ghost
Stranger
Things.
Busters.
Yeah, but I think that's even more too limited. I mean, this looks like, it looks like every Amblin Entertainment movie from like the late 80s to 90s. There's a very Super 8 kind of angle to this with the Oklahoma setting, which I'll never understand why we're in Oklahoma for this Ghostbuster story. But hey, okay. But yeah, I didn't really feel like this is in any way a more accurate version of Ghostbusters compared to the female reboot. Like, I mean, this actually does, the main character in this story is going to be another female Ghostbuster. So I don't understand how people were like, yay, this, none of that. Because, I mean, this is still the story of a young female Ghostbuster. And this feels less like a Ghostbusters movie than that did to me. It just makes me kind of wonder, like, do people really remember what Ghostbusters was? Like, Ghostbusters was a very adult-themed comedy when it came out. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of right. dark comedy. I mean, there's all kinds of jokes about, you know, banging ghosts. One of the key lines of that movie is, this man has a small penis, like, to the mayor of New York.
Yeah.
But
like,
also,
that's what kind of, this is when PG was very different.
Yes. Like, mm-hmm. Like, also, yeah. in the original trailer for the original Ghostbusters, it was presented as dark. Yeah. You didn't even know that it what it was going to be back. I mean, if you go back and watch the first trailer for the first movie, it was actually dark like this. It was creepy yeah. and it Good wasn't point. As humorous and things like that. So maybe there will be more humor, hopefully, fingers crossed. I mean, even just a little bit of cheekiness would be nice. But I completely hear you on this kid, I guess, lead character, because we are going to lose that really like flirty, goofy, fun vibe. I'm currently playing the video game that came out, Ghostbusters, and it is so much like the movies. It's like the next movie in the series when you're playing the video game. So it's very hard for me to like love anything besides what I'm currently in right now. Everything, we have all the lead characters. It's basically the story just going on. Our favorite characters come back, our favorite ghosts come back. So I'm very excited to see where it's going to go. I'm not as negative as you, but now that you're saying this, I'm starting to like get a little scared.
I think the trailer was actually pretty good, although I don't think it's reflective of what the movie will be.
Yeah, you nailed
which
it.
Which is smart. I think like I think about like Avengers Age of Ultron, how dark the first trailer for that movie was.
Yeah.
And then think about the movie, and it wasn't a dark movie at all. It was like a funny action like any other Marvel movie for the most part. And I think that's where we're gonna, like the scene with Paul Rudd where he says like, oh, it's a ghost trap. And like, I think there's going to be laughs there. It's not going to be dark and heavy like the trailer frames it. You don't hire Paul Rudd to be super serious the whole movie, but the reason it's super smart, I think, is because no one's asking for another Ghostbusters movie. I didn't mind the last Ghostbusters movie. I laughed a lot while watching the last Ghostbusters movie. I don't really, it's not a memorable movie, but it's not a movie that I look back on and say, it's terrible. It shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
So, but that's like the Terminator movies right now. Nobody's asking for them. So they're not going to make much money unless you find a way to make it super different.
That's
Terminator
true.
Dark Fate was pretty good.
Yeah.
It wasn't super different, and nobody really went to see it. So unless you market this as different, like nobody wants a Ghostbusters
and it's
movie
really,
right now.
It's like definitely hitting on the Stranger Things vibe for sure.
Yeah,
which
it's
is
hitting
totally
on what's popular
right
and what's working right now, and it's making it different. It's a good trailer. The whole time I watched it, I was waiting for the music to start. Like I thought,
me too.
All right, at some point they're going to flip the script and it's going to be funny and we're going to get excited and
see. I didn't want
that never happened.
I think you hit on it though. I think I remember the first trailers came out for the 2016. Reboot and they were full of gags, funny jokes, and it dudded. Like even the trailer, I remember the reaction to that trailer. Now take the sexist, you know, idiots out of it. Like
yeah,
the whole,
there was a
like,
lot of bad controversy
stuff
around that.
I don't care about. Like you're an idiot. I don't want your opinion. What I care about is like the substance of the like, hey, the humor is not spot on. The jokes are falling flat. You have four really funny leads and somehow you can't get a trailer to like be cohesive on a funny level. That's an issue, right? That's
it
a problem.
It probably is the maturity thing, like thinking about it, you know, because they didn't make like any sexual jokes or anything in that version of it.
But
and
then this trailer does the complete opposite, which when I didn't need the music. Now, I also come at this from, I am not the most hardcore Ghostbusters
fan. I'm a big fan.
Those two movies were fine. I don't hold them as like these classics of whatever. So I don't come at it from like, I need this to be that. I don't need this to be that. What I needed was something to hook me. I'm the one that needs to be hooked to care about a Ghostbusters movie. And for me, when that music starts before the like car reveal and like he goes in, like it hit just enough of this nostalgia points for me. And then when the car comes out and you hear the siren and you hear all that stuff, it's just enough for me.
Yeah.
I'm curious about the mystery. I'm curious about the, you know, 30 years, I think, right? Like 30 years later thing and like visiting all that stuff. For a fan like me, that's going to be interesting to see it through someone new's eyes because I don't have this like reverence. For
me, even further on what you're saying, I think I'd be more interested if this movie was the same exact trailer and not a Ghostbusters movie. Because I think it being a Ghostbusters movie is what set my expectation for the levity and the music.
Yeah.
And then I think my experience of watching the trailer was an expectation of that. And then it wasn't that. So I was like, that was so weird that you guys watched me watch the trailer. And I was like, this is a weird trailer, but I think it's a pretty good trailer. But as a Ghostbusters movie, I'm very intrigued that I don't.
Yeah. I watched it like three in a row.
I mean, I mean, I hear what you guys are saying. I don't feel the same way. I feel like there's nothing in this trailer that hooks me. If it's not a Ghostbusters movie, I would not even give this a second look. I'd be like, enjoy Oscar season. I'll see you like if you make it.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that too. The like, Ghostbusters, what like?
Did you just say Oscars for Ghostbusters?
No, I'm saying if this wasn't a Ghostbusters movie, the way that this trailer is presented, I'd be like, okay, this is like an award season movie, like whatever. Enjoy your drama about family discovery or whatever.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be interested. There's not a thing in this that hooked me. None of the characters really hooked me. I don't find anything. I mean, Paul Rudd's there and I'm happy about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Paul Rudd brings laughs and good
he's
times.
Great.
But
push a button on his thumb and shrink.
Yeah. But like nothing about this hook is there. I don't know these new characters well enough. This setting is very weird to me. Like in the middle of Oklahoma, small town. I'm not like itching to go hang out there.
Yeah. I hope they explain that to
nothing really exciting. And like I said, there's not a single character in this that made me go, oh, I want to see more of this person. And it's a talented cast. Finn Wolfhard and McKenna Grace, Carrie Coon. Mm-hmm. Those are all really talented performers. And I'm sure if we see more, maybe I'll get that hook. But they really, to me, need to kind of bring in the hook of, like, how does this new story connect to the old Ghostbusters? How do those guys factor in?
Yes, please.
What kind of humor are they going to bring to the table in that spice of the original film? Because the original Ghostbusters film is, well, it's not like my most beloved. It is cult classic to me. I mean, it was this, it's a, you still remains now like one of the most unique kind of films that was made. There's nothing quite like it. And this, the angle just doesn't feel right quite yet.
Now they did tease like those, some of those connections, but very briefly.
Yeah. I mean, you just showed me, but you showed me Ecto-1 and Finn Wolfhard doing a teen driving fantasy. Like,
yeah, but they showed you the old uniforms and you were in Egon's lab. Like, I mean, they did show.
That's not a hook. Showing me Ghostbusters empty uniforms, I can go to a museum and see
that. I'm saying you wanted connections to the old thing. Yeah. They did bring, those are connections to the old thing. I'm not saying they hook.
They're not what I'm talking about.
Okay, that's fine.
But
that's
there been
an empty uniform is not going to invoke the old Ghostbusters for me. I need to see the cast on there. I need to feel their riffing. I need to feel their
presence. But in my head, I saw that and went, what happened to them? That question is more interesting to me than seeing two old people making jokes that are probably dated and old.
So hold on one second. So like, hypothetically speaking, when the second trailer for this movie drops and it is funny, and it is, it's actually funny, like everybody laughs at it, we agree it's a funny trailer, and it shows you the original cast making those jokes and the music comes in. Are both of you going to change? You're not going to like it. And Kofi, you're going to like
it. Are you going to split
if it's done well, I'm going to like that.
I'm not against that. I'm just saying that's not what this was about.
Yeah, I'm not with him though. Like, I don't want the hook. The hook of what happened to the Ghostbusters, they got old. Like, some of them died.
Well, they actually say in the trailer that Ghostbuster, or there are no ghosts. There haven't been any ghosts around in 30 years. So, of course, they had to move on with their lives and have children and then make grandchildren.
But I want to see that. That story is more interesting to me.
Yeah, and that's the cast. That's like finding out that Ray is a used car salesman or something now and seeing Dan Aykroyd act that out. That's going to be funny.
Yeah, like, I'm excited to see that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're kind of flipping. You would like to see
what the question of what happened to them.
Yeah,
like
but
I
seeing
said in the
original cast act out those storylines will be interesting to you.
I'm saying this trailer, I don't need that from this opening trailer. What I needed was something, a question, an interesting hook. And for me, that hook was in here.
Okay.
And well, it wasn't in here.
And I'm happy for you that you enjoy that.
That's fine.
And, you know, as a casual fan of Ghostbusters, I'm glad this hooked you. But
I love that I'm just the neutral party here.
Who's somebody who's been like a long time heavier fan of Ghostbusters. It didn't quite hook me.
Yeah.
Welcome to episode 90 of the Comic Book Nation podcast.
I'm not saying he's wrong. I made it clear that that is not my bet.
Like,
all right, everybody's talking over everybody. Slow down. So that's just it. I mean, this one didn't sell me. And so, like, we're talking, and this exists in the context of several different trailers, big ones that have dropped in the last week. And for me, this is the bottom of the stack. I mean, that's just the way it is. We're talking about Black Widow, Bond, Wonder Woman, and this. And yeah, this is my number four.
I'd put this ahead of Bond.
So would I.
Nah. That Bond trailer was boring.
Yeah.
What?
Uh-huh. Gosh.
Wow.
I'm with you on that.
No. That Bond trailer,
hot take. I think Bond illustrated much more humor, teased much better action. This trailer teases what exactly?
Okay, it teases better action, but at the same time, like,
and humor.
I at least am I'm interested in the mystery Matt's talking about, a mission, and like seeing like the spirit of these kids and whatnot in the Ghostbusters trailer. Bond, like, I'm just like, well, that's a cookie cutter another Bond movie, and which is cool because I'm gonna watch it because I like
and
James
again,
Bond.
Like, yeah, I mean, and this is the thing, I was gonna go into all this, but yeah, the kid stuff isn't Ghostbusters to me. Like, Ghostbusters aren't kids; they're scientists,
they're
grown men,
adults,
and half of the fun is grown men, like actual scientists who believe in the paranormal and how they have to kind of face a society that thinks that's all superstitious
you
crap.
You need to promise me you'll play this video game because I anymore. Just
evidently
think
that
eat
seems
it
like
up.
Your jam.
Oh, no, I follow. I mean, the video games have always been where Ghostbusters have lived. I mean, even as far back as like Nintendo's original Ghostbusters game after the movies came out. So, like, yeah, I mean, I think this Ghostbusters isn't the hook that I was looking for, but we'll see what happens when the second trailer comes out. I'm not going to badmouth it too much because I know a lot of people are feeling it and are happy with it, and I want them to have those warm, happy feelings. All right, moving right along to something I'm going to be probably, again, it's going to seem like I'm sourpuss today, but I don't care. Keep
you
it real.
You're being a curmudgeon on episode 90?
Yeah, I mean, who cares?
No, I promise. He's in a great mood. We had a little chit chat before.
Yeah, I'm fine. I just don't like these trailers. Wonder Woman 1984.
Do better, studios.
Yeah.
No, I mean, Marvel's doing fine. I think Bond did fine, but Wonder Woman 1984. Let's move on. So I will put out the disclaimer because I'm never shy about putting out this disclaimer that, you know, before I have already been attacked about this. Like, guys, I was like one of the first people in the world to ever come out and say like the first Wonder Woman was going to be awesome after I took a visit to that in the editing process and came back and said that. And, you know, so I do support Wonder Woman. I do support Patty Jenkins, and I know they're capable of great things. I think the only thing I have to say about the Wonder Woman 1984 trailer is it's gorgeous about style. It really is. Mm-hmm. It's a gorgeous stylistic trailer. I love the costumes. I love the lighting and kind of the production and all that stuff. But in terms of, and I know this is a teaser, don't tell me the thing I already know, but like, yeah, in terms of the substance, like I'm not there yet. Like it hasn't illustrated enough substance quite yet.
I actually agree with you on this.
There you go.
Out of all the trailers, I was least excited about this one. And I'm shocked because number one, I'm obsessed with the 80s. The soundtrack was amazing. It looks beautiful, but I just couldn't really sink my teeth into anything. There was nothing that was really grabbing me in this trailer besides how awesome she is. I mean, and how great she looks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's going to hold true. Let me just say.
Like, yeah, it's just a trailer.
I think that Cheetah and Kristen Wiig is going to be good. I think Pedro Pascal is going to be really good as Maxwell Lord and really kind of dig into that role. I think the fight sequences are going to be awesome again. And like I said, there's a lot of style and stuff. And Chris Pine and Gal Gadot are going to still be riffing there.
So excited.
And I
about
like the role
him.
Reversal where he's kind of like the new one in society mm-hmm. and she's taking him through it this time. So I think that's all going to be great. But like, yeah. This one was just like a lot of like flash to me.
Right. We just need a little bit more meat and I'm excited to have that. So, it's going to be great, I'm sure.
Yeah, I not to make this a grief fest,
debate.
I absolutely loved this trailer. But looking back on a lot of the trailers we received over the weekend and mm-hmm. like the ones we've received recently, this was the one like I didn't go back and like rewatch.
Yeah,
like
same.
I didn't rewatch it, and it looks great. Like the sequence where she's got the lasso in the hallway
with the
lightning. Phenomenal. I was like, I'm all about that. Yeah.
I'm all about the lasso with the lightning. Yes. She can literally ride circles, lightning.
Like, there's so many cool things.
What?
And like, I love that. And plus it looks so different than the last one because she had the sword and the shield. So you're going to mm-hmm. get such a nice stylistic
she's
difference.
She's playing Pokemon. sword yes. shield joke.
Really? Oh my god, that's the best reference.
But like that all that stuff, and I'm with you both. I think I have utter faith. I absolutely think this movie is going to be great. But as a trailer, it didn't get me any more excited than I was previously. Like it didn't like jazz me up all of a sudden to be like, oh, I've got Wonder Woman fever. Like I'm just as excited as I was. I want to see the full one,
point.
And I'm just not. You know, it's not the one I'm most hyped about, I guess.
I think it's interesting. I really like the trailer. I think I'm usually the one who's like, I want to know more.
Yeah.
But I really liked it. It made me more excited for the movie. But I do want to say, it's hard to look. I'm looking at it through a different lens. And I can't say what I saw because I signed my first child away. But I went to the set for this movie and I saw pretty good information, which I've never told any of you because I can't tell anybody anything.
He tells me
but
anything.
Like, I know a little bit about the movie. So having watched the trailer,
yeah,
I kind of have
context.
That. So I think like maybe that might have influenced my opinion because I thought, but I was in love with the style of the trailer. The mm-hmm. music, yeah. I was like ready to dance.
The music was
and
great.
I was having a good time watching that trailer and I was like, wow, this is really cool. But I don't know if I can't remove myself from like having the bit of knowledge that I'll be able to share whenever.
Makes you sense. And Thanos just burden with knowledge.
For perspective.
But that makes sense. I
get
do that.
Burden
I
with
absolutely
knowledge
understand.
Star. But we went to the set for that movie like, for perspective on this, 3 days after I went to the set for Spider-Man Far From Home. Far From Home is on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
This movie's 7 months away. It's so
oh my
weird.
Gosh.
Yeah, man.
I've been keeping these secrets for way too long.
I have a question, and I know a lot of people are wondering about this. Cheetah, are we happy that they waited and they didn't show us?
I mean, they always that, do. I mean, by now, like, they don't show you a villain.
But are you glad about that, or are you kind of like frustrated that didn't make an appearance?
I think they could have shown me more. They showed Cheetah and Wonder Woman being like having cosmos and stuff. Like, I think they could have showed me a little bit more of the edge to.
Okay.
Like,
show me at least the mug. Like that mug we saw, like CCXP or whatever. Yeah. At least show me that. Like
got,
we don't get any
I got
shots
vibes
of that.
Of like Aldrich Killian and Tony Stark in that scene.
Ooh.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Or the beginning of Iron Man 3.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I don't think Diana would do like a Tony Stark snub on somebody, but I do get like obsessed with Diana vibes, like maybe a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, like that
yeah,
same relationship.
Like
and then like when it doesn't go the way the one who looks up to the person imagined, they become the villain. I mean,
okay,
like the Incredibles.
And I think that's, the hook that's teased here that I think they could have set up a more interesting conflict, which is Maxwell Lord and whatever he's using to deliver these kind of wishes to people that brings back Steve. They loosely kind of connect that it reverts back to her getting Steve Trevor back somehow. And if they had just kind of clarified a little bit of that connection, I think the Maxwell Lord angle, this was to introduce, hey, we recreated the world of the 80s. Look at it. I think I would have been more interested if, like, hey, here's this new villain, and he's very charismatic, and he's promising things, but, oh, he's the devil. Like, you know.
Yeah, I didn't think it had enough of that.
And
I agree.
How he was that so applies to Diana and to Minerva and, like, both
was
of them.
Was he not?
What's that?
He's very Trump-looking.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
oh,
I like, definitely get
Trump. I didn't even
he's the villain of Dude, a Wonder
go back
Woman
and look
movie.
At 19, man, look at what? Photos of Donald Trump in the 1980s, and, like, yeah, that's not
the hair, the suit, like, I can give you better, like, all, yeah. He's so
yeah. I mean, it's 1984. There's a lot of very on the nose reference, social, political references in this whole thing. So
the Dark Knight Golden Child makes that look subtle. Yeah. Just FYI. We'll get to that.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll talk about that. Yeah. That's being written up as we were doing this. They just unveiled some new art, which, yeah, I hope if you're trying to tell me about your comic book movies not having politics, you need to go check out what DC is doing over there right now. Geez. Yeah, your argument just fell apart. But so far, I mean, everybody has total faith in Wonder Woman. I don't think any of us are like, yeah, it's going to suck. Like, no, I mean, I rep for Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot from the moment I saw that No Man's Land scene, like roughly constructed. I was like, yeah, this is Wonder Woman. And I think this is going to be a good one, too. I just want to see more of that hook with Maxwell Lord, because I think he'll be the real secret centerpiece to this that helps make all this stuff move really well.
Agreed.
Cool. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, we have a quick announcement about some video game matters before we deep dive into a bunch of the TV, movie, and comic book subjects we got to talk about, so stay tuned. All right, Maddie. So you wrote this in here, Resident Evil 3.
I am very excited for this.
What? What?
I am very excited for this. So Resident Evil. So Capcom has been doing their like remakes of their iconic games. And Resident Evil 3 is like a personal. I love that game.
First Resident Evil I played was for the GameCube. And it was epic.
That's
oh my
four?
Gosh.
I had that. I couldn't play it. I was too scared.
It was so scary.
Fourth grade.
It was
you kids.
I was too scared to play
it. Oh,
kids.
Man.
Until you played that first Resident Evil on PlayStation. Because you had no idea that survival horror games even existed until those dogs jump through that window and you have to run to the end of that hallway.
When you go into that attic and that giant cobra is there. Oh my God. Like I ran back out of the room when that happened. I went, nope, and I ran back out.
No, but it's not a contest.
Resident PlayStation Evil. 2, the one where the guy like comes through the window when you're going down the stairs, that big dude with like the thing on his shoulder. I don't know, Creek Terror.
Nemesis?
Oh my with, like, God.
Well, see, the awesome thing is that Resident Evil 3 is really the first game in this series that allowed the antagonist to come through walls. So you couldn't before, you could go into a save room, you could go into a hallway and reset the timer essentially, and the zombies couldn't get through the door. In Nemesis, I remember that first time when you walk out of the hallway and that dude busts through the wall, and I it takes
like,
you a
you
minute.
Keep running.
It takes you a minute. And so they've done Resident Evil 2 remake is fantastic. They redid all the visuals, of course, but they also go in and like redo the levels and change placement and everything. So for the fact that Resident Evil 3 is not only getting that, but also Resident Evil Resistance, which is the multiplayer, like, weird kind of D&D trap game is the multiplayer mode to Resident Evil 3.
Oh, so you're going to get both.
So you're going to get both.
So it's a trap game where like you have to like sling out of your trunk and
it is exactly that.
I love trap games.
And like if you're curious, you can go to combo.com and read up on my impressions of Resistance, but it basically has like one person acting as the person trying to kill all the survivors, and you're using cameras and you're placing enemies and doing all this stuff, and the survivors have to team up to try and escape the room.
Wow.
So that's the multiplayer portion, and then you get the full-on campaign.
Multiplayer
of
online?
Multiplayer online, yes.
Nice. Okay,
though
cool.
I don't know if Couch is part of that, Couch Co-op or not. But so the fact that these are both united, I really came away jazzed after playing Resistance, and 3 I already love. So
what about consoles availability, things like that?
It's going to be on all the major consoles. Okay. I do not know about Switch.
Come on.
But it's going to be in, I believe.
If it was on GameCube, we can get it on Switch.
It's
going to
be April 3rd, 2020 is
April 3rd.
I'm stoked. So anyway, I was very happy this morning.
So, all right. That's Matt's plug for Resident Evil 3. He's getting that Capcom money on the side. No, I'm just kidding. But all right, so it's time to deep dive, as we tend to do. And first up on our deep dive, we are going to be talking about this latest episode of Watchmen. We've been tracking this show since its beginning, and we're coming to the end of season, hopefully just season one. But yeah, so let's talk about A God Walks Into a Bar. So if you're a longtime fan of Watchmen, then one of the biggest things you know is the character of Dr. Manhattan and, you know, his blue wang. No, I'm just kidding. That got a major upgrade with the reveal that
Abdul-Martin. I love that you call that an upgrade. That's so great. I mean, it really was.
It clearly was. I mean, they give you very clear visual proof in this.
The boyfriend that, literally shielded my eyes. Yeah. He was like, stop looking.
Like, all right. It was pretty... him and Jason Derulo have a competition going right now. But
Wow.
It's crazy. So...
Jason,
back to the real subject matter here. So we get an episode, and this episode was basically the big revealing flashback episode to how our protagonist, Angela A. Barr, Sister Knight, met Dr. Manhattan and fell in love with him. And the episode is so brilliant because what it does is it literally kind of lays out and depicts for you how Dr. Manhattan sees time as one continuous thing and exists in all points of his life at any given point. And it's this brilliant thing where he just walks into a bar and is hitting on her as the primary action to get her to go out to dinner with him. And it's during a festival celebrating him. So he puts on a fake mask over his blue face and kind of walks into a bar, starts talking to her. And then it's about how their conversation back then in Vietnam kind of relates to where Dr. Manhattan is in various places later before wherever in time since then. So it hops across time. It's very nonlinear and it connects so many dots that we've been seeing in the series so far about, you know, Angela's grandfather, Dr. Manhattan, like what's going on, and kind of teases this big ominous thing that's going to happen for the season finale. And this episode, I thought the Hooded Justice flashback episode would be the one, but this is an episode that makes me want to hold it up and say, okay, this is why this TV show deserves to exist. Like, this is how it takes the core story of Watchmen and really just deepens it and stretches it out for you to really be able to enriches the kind of ideas that are put forth in that book. So we heard in Watchmen about how Dr. Manhattan kind of sees time, but it was mainly just, there's a section of the book that goes through it, but it's one small section. It's like him making watches when he's young, then being disintegrated, his first girlfriend, and then thing. And this is all in that little contemplative moment before he goes to Mars and is like, I can't deal anymore. But it's a different thing to see it play out. And the show gives us some really kind of mind-boggling cause and effect ideas to play with that basically reveal, because Dr. Manhattan exists in all places and all times and is having conversations across time, like things that are said to him or things that he can say back inevitably are what actually kind of change the future or set up the future to be what it is. Because
we should also say, because we get flack. Spoilers.
Now we're going to talk major spoilers for this episode.
Because, I mean, we really didn't spoil anything until just now. So if you're tuning in, like, don't worry. We did not spoil it for you.
So here's what we kind of learned now that we're talking. Spoilers. So the galvanizing event of this whole series was Angela Abar's boss, the police captain, being hung from a tree. The suspected 7th Cavalry, but if she finds out it was her grandfather using this device, the mind control device, the Cyclops clan agent, like, you know, group was developing. But what we learned in this episode was the only reason her grandfather went and saw this guy and found out that he had like a past with Cyclops and in the clan was because Angela asks Dr. Manhattan in the present, like when she wakes him up, you know, he's talking to her grandfather in the past. And she asks him, he says, oh, I'm there with him right now, 10 years ago, talking to him. And she says, ask him about, like, why did he target him? How did he know he had a clan robe in his closet? And he asks her grandfather in the past while he's still having this conversation. He's like, what are you talking about?
Who is this guy?
Yeah, who is this dude?
And now he's going to go on his quest.
She finds out that he killed him because she informed him through Dr. Manhattan in the past that he was the guy.
Wow.
Yeah. And so she basically set in motion all the events of the show, all these terrible events that are kind of like now unfolding.
And it ends with that realization of hers. And it's just like, yo, mind blown.
Wow. Yeah.
But leading up to all of that, there is so much information that we get as well about everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Just all fits together. I'm going to let you tell everyone because you have this.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So we learn like Adrian Veidt's, like his whole storyline, like where he's been this whole time is Dr. Manhattan just made a copy of himself to distract people on Mars. But he really went to like a moon of Jupiter and he created paradise for himself. And he filled it with an Adam and Eve, who were the two people who took him in and got his father out of Nazi Germany. They raised him and introduced him to the Bible and all this stuff after he saw them having sex and like there's a whole thing about that. But he made them the Adam and Eve of paradise. And he took Adrian Veidt there as a gift because mm-hmm. Adrian Veidt is depressed because he saved the world, but nobody knows it. And so he just slips into depression. And, you know,
no glory
for what he's done and he can't handle it. So he's like ready to give up when Dr. Manhattan comes to him and says, do you want to go to paradise? He's like, yeah. And he goes. But then, of course, it eventually he realizes like this isn't paradise.
And
as
it's
he says,
kind of like
a prison.
It's kind of like a payment, right? Because Adrian gives him
the mechanism he can block his own memories and live as a human.
And that's kind of like his payback is like in a good way. He means well. And
well,
Adrian thinks he's going to love
he
it.
He does. But you also Dr. know Manhattan that knows he everything. Knows yeah. what's going to happen. Yeah. So he gives Veidt what Veidt thinks he wants and sends him there. And so he's been stuck on that moon of Jupiter because Dr. Manhattan forgot who he was for 10 years and became a human being and has been living with Angela as her husband. And Veidt's just been stuck up here and like on this thing. And he's been looking on how to try to get out. And at the end of the episode, in a post-credit scene, this wild post-credit scene, he kind of gets his like weird horseshoe and a cake and he begins tunneling out of jail. And so he's setting up to kind of escape and get back to Earth because he basically says he'd rather be needed in on Earth with all the savages than in paradise and just kind of wasting away. So, yeah. So we figure out that Dr. Manhattan, and it's actually a really touching love story somehow. Like, and he tells Angela straight up, like, we're going to have 10 years together in what they call the tunnel of love, because he describes it like, I can't see these 10 years. Mm-hmm. I just know that I go into darkness and you're there and I come out and you're there again. And that's all I know. She says that sounds like a tunnel. And he's like, and she's like joking, like a tunnel of love. Because throughout the episode, she's in Vietnam. She's in the past. She's skeptical. She's like, I'm not going out with you.
Yeah.
This dude, like, you're crazy. Like, she doesn't believe this is Dr. Manhattan the whole time.
Right.
And so, like, sure enough, like, he comes out of it, and now they're getting hunted down by the 7th Cavalry.
And he did warn her about that, too.
Yeah, he said it ends in tragedy.
It's a love story that ends in tragedy. Yeah. But so then he says, aren't all love stories, don't they all end in tragedy? And that is really deep, because that's kind of true. You know?
Yeah.
They always end.
And it's never really a happy
ending.
Dropping
truth bombs on this show.
Jeez.
Unless you Thelma and Louise it, like, yeah. It doesn't.
I am very happy.
You hurt?
I'm in a love tunnel.
Yeah, I mean, are we doing like a therapy session? I got some things to say, but no. So like, yeah, and it's a very cute and it's like a very touching love story. So, yeah. And so Angela's skeptical. And then the very last line of the episode is she's like, just F it. All right, I'll go to dinner with you. Like, whatever. Because mm-hmm. she thinks this dude is like, you know, at least funny. But yeah. And along the way, you see what happens across their whole relationship because their conversations, again, jump across time. So he tells her, as she's asking him questions, she says, well, how do you know this about me? He's like, well, you tell me. And she's like, no, I didn't. She's like, well, you'll tell me 6 months from now. And then we go to that scene 6 months when they're like in bed and they're having a fight. And then he says, I told you we'd be here. And she gets all pissed off, like, don't tell me. Like, yeah, you told me we'd be here. Now we're here. And she's like, keeps trying to avoid it.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to have a fight right now. And she's like, no, we're not. We're not having this fight. Like, blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, he just sits there and then like she spazzes out and she's like, like we're fighting. And that's the end.
She tells him to leave. And she's like, do I need to say it? And he's like, yes. She's like, leave.
Yeah. And so like, it's a whole thing. And it's a very good episode about relationships and love and connection and all this stuff. But it ends with, of course, she tries to save him from the 7th Cavalry. She goes on this like suicide gunslinger mission and nearly gets killed. He steps out and just makes everybody's head explode. And one of the greatest scene, he's just standing in the middle of all these guys with guns and he just points to each of them and their heads just explode into blue mist. And then she says, like, we changed it. We did it. And he's like, nah, sorry. And then he gets blasted with his tachyon cannon.
It's like, he could have just turned around and blasted that guy too. I don't understand.
But he couldn't. Like, that was the whole thing. Like,
he has to do what has
it's not even has to. It's not like he has a choice. It is what is going to happen. So like he takes
even
them
though
all
he
out.
Knows, yeah.
Yeah. And he knows it's unavoidable. So he gets kind of ripped away and now they have him prisoner, basically. And so that was like the end of the episode. But again, like this episode justifies why the show should exist, how it takes the kind of ideas of Watchmen, stretches them out, and makes them deeper and more enriching. And yeah, it was pretty fantastic. And the way it's cut together is pretty fantastic.
I gotta say, you got before.
Dude, you know what it's like? You should watch this, Brandon Davis. It's like that stupid Lost episode. It's like The Constant.
Oh, geez.
You haven't watched it yet? Oh my gosh, you're gonna love it.
Yeah, this is like the most Lost thing since Lost. Like, this is like The Constant, only I would argue it's maybe slightly better.
I saw the comparisons to The Constant.
Yeah.
And Janelle, if you haven't watched Lost, by the way,
I started you're looking
like crazy if you're not watching Watchmen.
Couldn't get into
The Constant is probably the best episode of that show.
Okay. Yeah, it's definitely one of the best. And. Well, this is.
I love you, Penny.
I also hate flying, so like this one just is the first episode of Lost freaked me out.
Well, I gotta give you credit. Just stare at the ceiling just now and not hear anything you just said. So if I do go watch Watchmen, which I probably will,
good.
It doesn't matter. Like half the joy of the show is the way they put it together and how each episode is like a really unique movie. Almost.
And they're all like standalone. Yeah, yeah, they're all so enjoyable. And I started off watching the series not having read the comics or even seen the movie, and I was still super into it.
Yeah.
Well, and even knowing. Like, I've been here with you as you guys, like, go back and forth, and I've heard all the spoilers, and it's only actually made me want to watch the series more. I was a little burnt out on Watchmen overall, like, into this. Like, I love the book. Yeah. I love
Doomsday,
the movie.
This is no Doomsday clock.
But, yeah. Like, after trying to, like, get that down for a while, I was like, I'm done. I'm done.
HBO.
Find somebody with an HBO.
Yeah. Count. It's on HBO.
And the button.
Or buy your own, yes.
But this has made me want to, like, hearing you guys be so enthusiastic about it. I'm going to tweet out, like, the
activate link. Yeah. I will say also,
whoever hooks it up.
Like, in the movie, you know, obviously the entire movie is based around Dr. Manhattan, this blue dude's glowing and what's going on. He literally controls the entire thing. Think about the blue version of Dr. Like, the main guy from the movie didn't even show up until the end of this first season. And it was standalone great, even before he was even part of it. It had its own awesome take, its own stories, all these other stories that made you care about all the other characters too. It's not just about him.
So it's going to be one hell of a finale coming up. And yeah, I hope Watchmen comes back because it definitely deserves it. It's one of the best.
Absolutely.
It might be my favorite TV show of 2019.
Me too. Yeah. It's mine for
sure. Up top.
Yeah.
All right, so now to something Brandon Davis and Matt and Brandon, you guys are gonna take us home.
I get
to put down some heavy lifting.
I'll take you home.
First, we're gonna talk about Birds of Prey. Before we get to Wonder Woman, we got to get through DC's Birds of Prey movie, which is actually growing on my anticipation list as I've learned more. The set visit Brandon did was very informative. We confirmed some things that I thought were very interesting, like that Harley Quinn is going to be a narrator of this, and there's a kind of a Rashomon element. If you don't know what Rashomon is, go look it up. You have Google.
Is that a Pokemon? I'm just kidding.
No,
sorry.
Please. No.
Had to.
Please stop.
Well, I like the Pokemon jokes in today's show.
Yes.
But it's going to be like a demented Rashomon, which is Harley's the narrator of this movie. And so she's telling it in her view, which is going to be filled with some errors and some redos and some like fun storytelling things. And so that was just one fact. But Brandon Davis, walk us through the set visit to Birds of Prey. Should we be excited? What did you learn?
I'm going to be honest. They really didn't tell us that much on the set. It was kind of like one of those set visits where they were like, we're going to keep everything a secret, but thanks for coming.
Yeah, a lot of the quotes from were like, oh, this is so hard. I can't talk about it.
The movie comparisons were interesting. The unreliable narrator thing is interesting. They said it exists in a parallel universe to Suicide Squad, which kind of, I think when you tie that together with the unreliable narrator thing, and we might be left with like a Joker question at the end, did this really even happen? But I don't know. I think a lot of it will be real, but then we'll just like get different versions of it. Like, no, that didn't happen. This is how it really went. Stuff like that. It's gotta be R-rated. I mean, they wouldn't like say for sure, yes, this is R-rated. Margot Robbie basically said that. Like, she talked about how she feels liberated and getting to push boundaries and stuff. We watched them shoot one scene, a 3-minute scene about from the end of the movie, towards the end of the movie, where all the whole gang is together. Renee Montoya comes crashing in with her gun and she's like, hands up. And then Harley Quinn isn't about it. And she calls her a mother effer and all that. I mean, like, they're in the one take of this 3-minute scene, I counted the F word 16 times. In one take, one single take. Now, there were takes where it was less than that, and there were takes where it was more than that. Like, it just seemed like they were just...
What is given, this, comic book lunchroom?
It was just, they were just given complete free reign to
use... Props to you for actually remembering and knowing to count.
I took a tally, I had my notebook, and I was like, I want to count because there's so many, I think this will be an interesting fact. There were 16 F words in one take.
That's why you get paid the big bucks.
That includes Huntress, Black Canary, Cass... they're calling her cats Cassandra Cain.
Yeah.
Harley Quinn and Renee Montoya. Between those six characters, there are 16 F-words in one take. Then they said something in, like, one of the producers, Brian Unculus, sorry, Brian, if you're watching. But he said, like, oh, we're just kind of shooting, and then we'll find out what the movie is when we edit it. There's just no version of a 16 F-word scene that you can edit out the F-word. And in the trailer that we got, they have to release a Red Band show for this. And I think the anticipation of this movie is not that high. I don't see like tremendous reaction from people when we post stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't see tremendous excitement on social media. There is a pocket of social media that is very excited, but it's a pocket. Whereas Wonder Woman is bigger. Black Widow is bigger than both of those, I feel like, because it's part of the MCU. And I think it just gets that advantage. Whereas Birds of Prey, I'm surprised, isn't getting huge excitement when new trailers and photos and stuff come out. But when they drop that Red Band trailer and she's not saying Harley freaking Quinn, she's saying Harley expletive Quinn. Like, it literally says on her shirt on the set, her shirt says Harley effing Quinn, like spelled out. So I think once they embrace that, people will start getting excited.
Yeah, and there's new details we learned. That would make people happy. Like, there's going to be a Black Mask.
He's actually going to be wearing a black mask. Yeah. Like, why are they hiding this stuff? Why don't they just come forward and show us all the things we want to see?
Yeah, I mean, it has been kind of a questionable marketing approach, because what we're kind of hearing is that this is going to be a lot crazier and zanier than we've seen, with Harley trying to narrate this thing, and kind of presenting that narrative structure in a trailer would be really great and interesting. Yeah. Also, that Black Mask is going to be kind of like an unhinged psycho who actually does kill people and wear a black mask. Menacing villain, you want to put that in there. Like, all of that stuff is stuff we really should be seeing now. But we'll see.
What's interesting to me is that it more so than even embracing the comics, I think it's embracing like the animated stuff.
Yeah.
Because like, there were props, like there was a pinata bomb, which was a dodgeball wrapped in yarn and candy, and it's an explosive.
Yeah.
So
like,
cool.
My question though on that, like, it sounds really cool and I'm very excited that they're doing that. And to play devil's advocate with my own excitement is this going to end up like The Lion King, where it works better because it's animated? You know what I mean? Like, making it live action.
I think one of the things that stood out, you mentioned it, when we saw the trailer, was her in the car with Cassandra and saying, can you toss this, the dynamite, and they toss it and the car behind them like blows up. That's very animated.
Yeah, that's a very
Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
And it works.
It really is. It works.
I think the animated stuff is going to be the stuff that actually works.
I hope so.
I mean, there is... Batman the Animated Series did all this. There is unreliable, this kind of Rashomon, I almost got him, which is like one of the most famous Batman stories, period, from the animated series, where all the villains are sitting around a table telling the stories about how they almost caught Batman these times, with a big twist at the end, which is awesome.
So cool.
And this is kind of like that. And this is kind of even making fun of, in a way, of Suicide Squad, in a way that it kept just telling the same introductory stuff. Kind of taking that and turning it in a fun way to have Carly purposefully doing that.
Yeah.
Like, these are all good things that are baked into this thing. I honestly just don't think they've had it together in the can yet. I think that approach to, we'll just find this movie, always ends a disaster.
Yeah.
And that's why they've gotten Chad Stahelski in there to do the action. It seems to be testing better.
We've heard the good things about the reshoots improving the movie. That's interesting that you bring that up, because the one thing that they really wouldn't tell us anything about was the story of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, they wouldn't tell us what this movie was about while we were on set. And so, I mean, that's not really all that uncommon. A lot of times they will keep things from you as a means to prevent you from getting spoilers. But I mean, they wouldn't really tell us anything about the story.
I think part of the reason why, because you brought up, like, you see a very small pocket. Like, it's and Birds of Prey, as a big Birds of Prey fan, it's a cult following, right? It's a very much a cult following anyway. But this doesn't feel like a Birds of Prey movie.
And I think that could be one of the difficulties. And my theory is growing ever since I've heard about Harley being the narrator, is that Harley's really going to end up in Gotham City Sirens. That's really what's going to happen. Mm. After this, they have now a Catwoman.
Mm-hmm.
They'll have a Harley Quinn. They just need a Poison Ivy. Like, they'll do Gotham City Sirens, because Birds of Prey is really about a team of Gotham City female heroes.
Yeah.
Gotham City Sirens is their counterpart. They're Gotham City's female villains. So it was always a question, like, what the hell is this, a Birds of Prey movie with Harley Quinn? And I think it's going to be Harley Quinn telling the story about how she had this awesome adventure and team up with the Birds of Prey. But at the end of the movie, we might find out, like, them being like, nah, like, not at all. Like,
you're
not hanging out with us. Like, you got to go. And that'll be like the sad ending that kind of comes in the trailer, where she's drinking in a bar and she's like, no,
that would be awesome.
I would absolutely adore that, because then it would explain why Batgirl is not in this at all.
Exactly. Because
Batgirl is the leader, is supposed to be the leader of this team.
Wow.
If they develop her solo movie,
yeah,
you get this time to then do a Gotham City Sirens in between, and then you bring, if you want to bring these
people back. And that was the thing, the rumor, yeah, that the third film would be a crossover.
Between.
Yeah, it would be like Birds versus Sirens, which is...
Which would be great.
With the female heroes versus female villains. And so I think this unreliable narrator will end with Harley like being revealed like, no, this isn't my team. This isn't my space.
I would love that.
And she goes off. And if they had a cameo, like a somebody they introduced, like a Poison Ivy or Zoe Kravitz's Catwoman or something like that.
Yes.
There's like, no way Zoe Kravitz is Catwoman.
No, of course not. Oh, I mean, yeah, it's too late.
To say.
It's too late in the process, of course. But I'm saying if something like that, that would be kind of interesting. Or just
it would be super
interesting. Some kind of setup to say there is a place for you. And yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's one thing for me is another. I mean, you... It's no secret. Everybody who listens to this and everybody in this room knows I'm such a continuity snob. But like, that's the thing is like, I'm excited for each of these DC movies to be good. But then like one after the other, it just seems like they're trying to do something else. And it's like, wait, is this relevant to what's coming? Because I get more excited by knowing if I enjoy this Birds of Prey movie, that's great news because then I'm going to really care about the Suicide Squad after it. And then I'm really going to care about Batgirl after that. Whereas right now it seems like, well, you're just going to enjoy this movie and then why? We don't know yet.
And that's why like Marvel is more successful in that. And DC needs to do that as well.
Yeah, they're trying to, I don't know. They've worked. Like their movies have been good as individual, as isolated. Yeah. Like Aquaman was good because they didn't try to force in other stuff. Shazam was good because they didn't try to force in connections to other stuff. Joker, I loved it, but that was the definition of isolated.
Yeah.
So I feel like they're doing that. And I mean, when we were on set, they were like tried to distance it from Suicide Squad. Oscar award winning Suicide Squad, mind you, so much that they literally wouldn't name it. They referred to it as the other movie.
Oh,
wow. That's just ridiculous. Wow. You're getting a little ridiculous.
Yeah, it happened.
You made a lot of money and got an Oscar. Yeah, you can name the good movie. It, like, yeah, right.
They were, but that does make me feel better. If I hope good things for this movie, because I would like to see Black Canary and Huntress used in other stuff. But also, it's the same writer who's writing Batgirl. Yep. So if this comes together in some way, I'll feel better about Batgirl.
But then does it go on to the Suicide Squad and then it's something else with Harley where are we just going to disregard that when Batgirl happens? Like, I don't.
Yeah,
I
mean, this is what's got to be answered in 2020. Kinda.
Yeah.
So this will be, and I think the marketing will kick up right after. I think they're going to wait till after the holiday movie season.
They have to release a Red Band trailer.
Yeah. And I think right after Star Wars is out of the way and all that stuff is that dull time after Christmas and we're all like dead and
depressed, huddled
inside. And and it's dark outside. Then you start the marketing blitz. Drop that Red Band. Get the year started right. Like, go
and I feel like that release date is great for it. I feel like it.
February's great.
That's a great spot. Yeah. You got that weekend. Then you got Valentine's Day weekend. Yeah. The weekend after.
Perfect for that.
Yeah. So, all right. That's Birds of Prey. That's Brandon's report from the set. Hopefully, it all comes together to take us home today. Matt, you know what time it is. Yeah. It's comics time.
Well, we're all getting taken home.
I got a lot to fit in here, so I'm gonna run through a couple of these. First off, we mentioned it earlier. I don't know if you had a chance to read it. So, Dark Knight Returns, The Golden Child, number one.
No, I saw it. I haven't popped it open yet.
So this is a one shot from Frank Miller, and it's set in that same universe. It's set after Master Race, which was the last one. So, you know, Carrie is Batman or Batwoman in this case, and you're meeting Jonathan Kent, who is this like weird child prodigy, can do all these amazing things. I'm not going to go into spoilers, of course, too much here. This is Frank Miller stuff tends to be pretty, there's always topical stuff in these make, I mean, they're having some mayoral race. So I think it's governor or race or something. So it's not the presidential race, but there are Trump pictures of Trump all throughout this book. Like, this book does not shy away from that at all. So if you were not looking for that
people who claim, you know, comic books shouldn't have politics in them.
Don't read this. It's all like, it is.
Hey, don't send us letters because we're just telling you.
Please, I'm just bracing you.
Don't go on iTunes marking us down.
Yeah. That's nice. Hammer and nail though. Nothing subtle. It's all over this book. But as a story, this is actually one of the first ones in a while of this universe. And from, I didn't really dig Master Race.
No, God.
This, I actually like it. And it's a one shot, one and done. So 52 pages, you're in and out. I actually like it.
Limited Frank Miller is good Frank Miller.
Definitely check that out. Batman Curse of the White Knight. Again, this is the Joker struggling with his kind of more human persona, Jack Napier, who kind of comes out, you know, in previous issues, we've learned that like he has two children with Harley Quinn, and she's kind of trying to coax the that sane side out because she hasn't given up on him. And it's a really interesting story. And then also ties back into all this stuff in like the past about the Waynes and how they came into power. And there's a lot of really interesting stuff here. So definitely check that out. It's issue number 5. Detective Comics number 1017. The last few issues of this have been fine, but I ended up reading this issue and then I kind of after the fact, I was like, man, that was really good. Like that just came out of nowhere. And it turns out Tom Taylor wrote this issue of Batman just on a whim, I guess. I don't know why, because typically Tomasi is the writer. So if you're looking just for a great single issue of Batman, this is great. Also, Far Sector number 2, the coolest Green Lantern like in so long. She's right. Awesome. This issue is, again, this is the same one where they're on that planet where they haven't had a crime in so long that they're it's like Green Lantern and CSI like merged together. There's a lot of investigative stuff. She's just a really cool lead. If you're looking for a Green Lantern book that feels fresh and new, this is definitely the one. Superman number 18. No spoilers here because there is actually some big stuff that happens in this issue. This is the best issue of Bendis Superman so far. This is a great, since Bendis took over the Superman books that kind of had not been sold. This is just a great issue. If you're looking for an issue that kind of epitomizes what Superman can be, that hope, that finding, meaning and humanity in people's lives. This is a great issue for that. So definitely check
it out. It's so hard to make Superman relevant today.
This issue, I think, does a great job of that. I think this issue does a great job.
He doesn't break necks. I ain't reading it.
No necks are broken. Spoiler. No necks are broken. Teen Titans Judas Contract. Number 1, this is the Dark Multiverse series of books. So they put that kind of unique evil spin. So this is takes, there's one scene that like, there's a lot of people die in this book, just no spoilers on who, but a lot of people die in these books, these dark multiverse takes. This one is a really interesting spin because it kind of comes from a decision made out of compassion, not of just, typically these things are like someone dies and then sets the whole thing off or changes everything. This is very different. So I like the approach. So if you're looking for that, check it out. Captain Marvel number 13. We are part 2 of the Last Avenger arc. This issue has a lot of answers as to why in the previous issue she beheaded Thor and was attacking the other Avengers. So a lot of stuff comes up for that. Fallen Angels number 3. I'm mentioning this because we always talk about, we'll talk about it next episode with all the other X books. There's 3 more this week. But along with New Mutants and X-Force are the other ones. But this issue is, to me, the worst issue of this series so far. I'm typically not negative, but I didn't like this at all.
At least you're telling
everybody.
Well,
at least we know it's going away.
So
I also didn't like the art. There's salvageable parts of like the story, but the art is just terrible. I don't know what happened. Like someone.
At least this book is going away.
I was not a fan. Marvel's Avengers Iron Man number 1 is a prequel comic to the upcoming game that's coming to consoles next year. So if you're into that, check that out. Strike Force number 4. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 100. So if you are a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan, if you've been reading that, I know Jamie's been a huge fan of the series. This has actually been one of those, like, I feel like it's kind of not talked about enough and underrated. 100 is really good, so definitely check it out. D&D Infernal Tides number 1. If you are a tabletop fan like me, Dynamite has a new series for that as well. Go-Go Power Rangers number 26.
Of course.
Gotta rep the Power Rangers. Hellmouth number 3 is the Angel Buffy event. That's been getting really interesting. Red Mother number 1 is a new horror series from Boom Studios, which is essentially about someone going through a really horrific accident where they lose their eye. But when they get a new one implanted, they start seeing all this really crazy stuff. It's kind of, they're like being able to see the spirit world and see all this stuff.
So interesting horse.
People.
And then, for those who like The Magicians, the show, they're actually doing a spinoff sequel comic in Boom Studios. So if you like Magicians, Magicians number 2 is out now. So that is your comic minute.
Nice.
All right, Matt, thank you. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. If you're just now getting into the show, we put in new episodes every Wednesday, every Friday on comicbook.com, where you can subscribe to our RSS feed, or you can catch them on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, iHeart Radio, Google Podcasts, Google Playlists. You can tell your Amazon Alexa devices to fire up Comic Book Nation Podcast, or find us on YouTube. If you want to continue the conversation about anything we talked about, hit us up at the hashtag Comic Book Nation, or you can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
And you can find me at Janelle Wheeler on all socials, and I am also on Twitch playing your favorite video games.
And Mr. Brandon Davis, you want to shout it out from the corner over there?
Oh, you can find me at Brandon Davis BD.
All right. That'll do it. Thank you guys for tuning in. As always, we'll be seeing you guys next episode. Until then, we out.
Deuces.